morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. And, yeah, it's Monday morning, so that means my dad will call in and tell a jokey time. The Monday morning movie reviews are about to start right here. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and much more join me to talk about the new movies. Don't have a lot to talk about this week, but we will tell you more, even more details about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. And we'll tell you about how you can get your festival pass and all the other stuff that's available for that. So we'll give you details on that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're also going to talk a little bit later on about the best and worst buddy cop movies of all time. And I was watching 48 Hours over the weekend, and just that might be the perfect sort of example of that genre. There are so many more, and we have a lot of fun talking about that, so we'll get that in there too as well. All right, so you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. All right, so the movie reviews begin right now. Let's welcome Eric to the show. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello.
All right, so we don't have much to talk about this week in terms of movies, but we do have some box office stuff that we're going to get into as well, Eric. But Eric, remind everybody about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is starts Friday.
Yeah, we are just a few days away from our fifth anniversary, and tickets are selling fast, particularly for opening night. So you want to get in on that really quick. Passes are on sale right now. For the entire festival, for only $150, you can see every single movie playing at the festival, including Colin's two short programs. You get access to the closing night festivities. It's the best value in town, really. But individual tickets are on sale for everything throughout the week. We have guests for the first six nights of the festival. And also closing night, David Lowery's A Ghost Story, that's also selling very, very hot right now, too. So definitely you want to, reserve some tickets.
All right. And they are available right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Music Box Theater website. You can go to musicboxtheater.com, or you can go to Chicago Critics Festival, Film Festival.
Yes.
And get your tickets there. And there are going to be a bunch of people who are going to be showing up. Great guests and great movies and all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
And Colin, tell us again a little bit about the short programs that you put together.
Yeah, there's two of them happening over the weekend on Saturday, May 13th at 1 o'clock. And for that one, I'm going to have two guests, Laura Moss, who made a great film called Friday, and Mark Borchardt, who people might know from the documentary American Movie. He will be there with his latest short film, The Dundee Project, which is a documentary about Wisconsin UFO enthusiasts. So that's going to be a super fun afternoon. We've got eight great short films, foreign animation, drama, documentary, and experimental stuff. And that's the same for program two, which is Sunday, May 14th at 2:15 p.m. Both programs are kind of a mixed bag of genres. And actually, I got a perfect Mother's Day film for the shorts program two, a comedy called The Arrival, about a boy who wishes for a new mommy and gets one. It's a pretty funny film. By two filmmakers we had last year at our festival, Don Lube and Jocelyn DeBoer from the Upright Citizens Brigade. They're not going to be here this year, but their film is, and it's actually a very funny and appropriate Mother's Day film. So that's Sunday at 2:15.
Okay, and all those things are all of it is detailed on the website.
You can
check it out. I'm at the Music Box website right now, and it's really easy to get to, and it tells you about every single movie and every single event. And all that cool stuff. People like Aubrey Plaza and Kate Micucci are going to be there. Richard Kelly is going to be in-house to show a 35mm screening of his great movie Southland Tales. Noel Wells is going to be there. Pat Healy is going to be there. Lots of really cool people. John Carroll Lynch, who's a great actor, who's presenting his directorial debut, the Harry Dean Stanton movie Lucky. Yeah, so it's just going to be a really, really cool thing. And it starts on Friday, and it goes through the 12th through the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
And the tickets are available now. Festival passes are $150, and you should check it out right now. You can go to the Music Box Theater website, or you can go to Chicago Critics Film Festival. Yeah, so that's going to be really, really, really great. I'm coming for sure on Saturday.
Oh, that's great.
I'll be there for the 6 o'clock Lucky and then the 8:30 Southland Tales. So
yeah, and I urge people to go and, you know, look through the entire lineup because, you know, obviously we are reminding people about all the special guests that we have there, but we got a lot of really terrific movies that just don't have guests, and people should show up. Like on Saturday, there's a movie called Band-Aid that's playing at 3:30 before Lucky, the directorial debut of Zoe Lister-Jones with Adam Pally and Fred Armisen. That's a real treat. A documentary on Saturday morning, a perfect Saturday morning matinee called Score. That's all about film composers and the process of putting movies, the soundtracks and stuff, which is really terrific. So look through the lineup because we have documentaries and, like, you know, there is a varied as a Colin Short program. So there really is something for everybody this fest.
Yeah, and you guys do have a couple of horror films in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a midnight film called Bitch, written and directed by Mariana Palka, who is an amazing voice about a housewife who kind of goes insane, or not insane, but she takes on the personality of a dog, and horrifying things happen. And that's definitely one people want to check out at our midnight shows. We also have a great midnight show called Bird Boy, The Forgotten Children, which is a very bizarre animated film from the G-Kids studio. Hard to explain, much like Southland Tales, which comes before it.
Right.
but fascinating and beautifully animated, and it's from Spain. Those are two midnight films that are really amazing movies. Okay. That people should check out.
All right, cool. And again, Festival Pass, this is the best way to go. It's $150. It's an unbelievable bargain. And you can go to any and all of the movies and all the events and all that cool stuff. And if you want to check out details on each and every one of the movies, they're all detailed. You can browse around and look at all the different showtimes and the different movies and a lot of cool stuff. So you can go to the Music Box website, which is musicboxtheater.com, or you can go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Eric and Colin are here. We don't have a lot of movies to talk about. In fact, there's only one big movie to talk about. And then one other film that we will be talking about as well. So there you go. And get your tickets for the Chicago Critics Film Festival. It should be a good time. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. You can check us out on Facebook. The best way to stay connected is to like us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NickDShow. You can also check us out on Twitter, @NickDShow. And it's Monday morning, and we'll get back to the Monday morning movie reviews and the box office report. That's coming up. Plus, we're going to talk about the best and worst buddy cop movies of all time. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time on a Monday morning. Okay, let's get back to it. And here's Eric Childress. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin Suter. Hey, Colin.
Hi.
All right, Colin, tell us about David Lynch, The Art Life.
Okay, well, this is a documentary about David Lynch, and you might think that this is going to be a straight-up career retrospective doc, you know, about a great artist, but that is not quite the case here. This is a film that chronicles Lynch's life right up to the point where he started making Eraserhead. And it's all told through David Lynch's words. It's his story. He tells it, and it's pretty interesting. He tells stories of his suburban upbringing, his parents, his life in Boston, his life in Philadelphia, his marriage, stories of what happened, what he tried drugs, and, you know, how he eventually discovered his art. Much of it is shown through his paintings and drawings, and those become the kind of visual through line for the whole film. And there's some present day stuff of him working on a new canvas and playing with his, I think it's his granddaughter. And it's all told through David Lynch's words, no music to it or anything. It's just David Lynch talking for 90 minutes, but not in the same way that De Palma did in his film last year, which was a pretty much a straight up career retrospective. You know, David Lynch has a very kind of slow, methodical cadence that could be a bit burdensome for some people. I thought it was fine. It didn't bother me because I think he's an interesting storyteller, and I always want to hear what he has to say. I think it's important going in knowing that it's not going to just be, you know, like the Richard Linklater documentary that came out last year. This is just David Lynch talking about his life before he was a filmmaker. And if you're up for that, it's interesting. If you're hoping for, you know, insight on, you know, what does everything in Mulholland Drive mean, you're going to be disappointed. I think the film is a good collection of anecdotes and stories that are not necessarily meant to make people, you know, laugh or anything like that. It's mostly about, you know, what his art is and, you know, sort of the deepest depths of where it comes from for him. But I do think that one thing where the movie comes up short, if we're going to talk about art and being an artist, you kind of have to get into, you know, what inspires the artist and what, where, you know, is there an influence or a conscious or unconscious influence of somebody else's art seeping into your own art? Because I don't think it exists in a vacuum. It's got to come from somewhere else, as well as your own, you know, experiences. And I think the movie misses that, unfortunately. There's not that kind of information, I think, is crucial and should be in there somewhere. Even if Lynch doesn't have a real answer for it, I think the acknowledgement that he doesn't have an answer for who influence, if there's any influence, or even what kind of art he really likes, whose other work does he gravitate towards? Even if he doesn't have an answer for that, there should be, just the question should come up. But other than that, I think the movie is pretty solid at what it does attempt to accomplish. I think if you're a fan of David Lynch, you should definitely check it out. If you're not a fan, maybe not. You know, this is a niche documentary, much like De Palma. And I think that if you're really interested in Lynch and want to know more about him, it's worth checking out. And I should also say there's stuff in the movie where you do sort of put the piece together. If you know his films enough, where you go, oh, I wonder if that's what inspired that scene from Blue Velvet. And, oh, there's some Lost Highway imagery that he is working with. I wonder if that helped influence, you know, I wonder if that's where that image from Lost Highway came from. That's interesting. So there's little things, little clues in there to put pieces together for his films if you know them well enough. So for fans of David Lynch, very much recommended. Not fans of David Lynch? Probably not.
Okay. And it's playing at the Music Box exclusively, so you can check it out at the Music Box. That's David Lynch, The Art Life. Colin, did you get to see any of Lynch's stuff that they screened?
I didn't. It is just poorly timed for me, for a lot of us, because we're just gearing up for the festival, which is, you know, the weeks leading up to our film festival are rather time-consuming with putting everything together, so it just didn't work out, unfortunately. I definitely would have. If it was next week, or if it was the week after our festival, I certainly would have any other time, but just this week was bad. So
yeah, I wanted to get out and see. You mentioned Lost Highway. Lost Highway is one of my favorite, one of my favorite David Lynch movies.
Yeah, I wanted to see Mulholland Drive again because I haven't seen it since it first came out. And yeah, so I mean, his movies should be seen on a big screen, you know.
Yeah.
It's what they're made for.
Yeah.
A dark room, you know.
Exactly. I was really, because in some of the showtimes didn't work out really. And I wanted to see Inland Empire again. That didn't work out. So, Eric, I'm assuming you didn't get down to see any of the Lynch.
No. Not the biggest Lynch fan, particularly the back half of his career. But people who missed out on the Lynch films can go see Lucky on Saturday. David Lynch has a prominent supporting role in that.
Yeah, he's in that movie, right.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool. I'm looking forward
to it. A terrific one, actually, too.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, well, there's only one other movie to talk about, and it made a little bit of money over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a wee bit of money. And that's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Eric, tell us about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Okay, Guardians fans. Well, you know who these characters are, and they are back. You have Star-Lord, as he likes to be called, Chris Pratt, and Zoe Saldana as Gamora, and Dave Bautista as Drax, and Bradley Cooper voicing Rocket Raccoon. And, of course, you got Baby Groot, who was reborn at the end of the first film and is now an adorable little baby tree, who in the opening scene is dancing around while the Guardians are defending the planet's precious batteries from some mysterious alien force that is just trying to destroy it. They successfully do that, but upon leaving, Rocket manages to steal some of the batteries, and an intergalactic manhunt basically goes on for the Guardians. But they find some refuge when they are rescued from the incoming armada by a man referring to himself as Ego, and this is played by Kurt Russell, and he announces himself as Peter Quill's long-lost father. And thus begins this side journey for the Guardians in a story that is pretty much literally all about family. Many different subplots throughout the film, not just the relationship between Peter and his father and the god that he has basically become since what was once assumed his time on Earth, but in fact he was in sort of like classic Greek mythology, a god who visited the Earth and impregnated Peter's mom. And now Peter realizes he's half god and the implications that come along with that. But there are also the characters from the first film that we remember, Michael Rooker, who was kidnapped Peter back in when he was a child and brought him into space and made him the intergalactic criminal that he is today. He's on a mission to reacquaint with him, as well as Gamora's sister, played by Karen Gillan, who is also on a quest for revenge against her sister. And all of these stories are going to connect at some point. And so the first movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, I was not the biggest fan of. I thought that the first movie was trying not just a little too hard to appease with its sort of its off-kilter, quirky quality, and Chris Pratt, I think, trying a little too hard to wink at you and nudge you in the ribs at the same time with how off-kilter his character is supposed to be. Not the biggest Zoe Saldana fan, although I very much enjoyed Bradley Cooper's work as Rocket and surprisingly Dave Bautista, who I thought was really funny as Drax. I thought there was just a lot of stuff going on in the first movie that trying to really not just keep itself siphoned off from the rest of the Marvel Universe, but at the same time also trying to fit itself in to the overall arcing story of the Infinity Stones and, exactly trying to figure out how these characters were going to fit into that eventual narrative. But then this film...
Okay, hang on, Eric. We got to take a break, okay? And then you can tell us what you think of the new one. That's right. Eric Childress is giving us a review of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And Colin and I will also give our reviews of it. And when we come back, we'll hear more about what Eric thinks of the latest. All right? So take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanch with the opening bell at 5, and, of course, Steve Cochran at 6 here on 720 WGN. It's Monday. That means Monday Morning Movie Reviews. We're right in the middle of that, and we'll talk about the box office as well. And my dad will call in and tell a jokey time, and we're going to talk about buddy cop movies and some of the best and worst of that specific fun genre. And that's all coming up here. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter and Facebook. Best way to stay connected, Facebook.com/NickDShow. Okay. Before the break, Eric told us about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. His thoughts on the first movie, and now we'll get back and talk about his thoughts on the latest. And welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
Okay, so what did you think of the latest one?
Yeah, so what I was saying is that what I think with what James Gunn has been able to do at Volume 2 is that based off the success, the huge success of the first movie, James Gunn pretty much seemed to have carte blanche to do whatever he wanted to do with this one. And it's kind of the same way that Sam Raimi got to make his Spider-Man 2. This definitely feels like the movie that James Gunn really wanted to make, not just the first time around, but particularly with this one, because this one feels like its own standalone movie. It doesn't feel like a film that is trying to nudge its way into, again, the overall narrative that's going to lead to the Infinity War film. It feels just like an opportunity to really get to know these characters better. I've heard a few nagging complaints that the Guardians are split up throughout this movie. Even though many of them are in the same landscape, they're not always together. But I think that's actually one of the strengths of the film, because I think that not just siphoning Chris Pratt off a little bit to hang out with Kurt Russell, which is always a plus for just about any movie to spend extra time with Kurt Russell, who is really, really terrific in this movie. But it gives an opportunity to learn more about Gamora and the sister, and to find out more about Michael Rooker's character, and more about what exactly drives Rocket Raccoon. I think that this is a movie that can actually stand to to use the line, what is this all about? And someone actually says the word family, and it feels like a franchise that can get away with that and not produce snickers. I like this movie a lot more than the first movie. I think that there are some really interesting things going on here in sort of playing with that idea of Greek mythology and our relationship to the gods. I think the movie is funnier than the first movie. Just because this movie doesn't quite decide on a villain right away, I also think gives the movie some strength, because the action sequences the mayhem of both of these movies are not really the highlights of these films. I don't go to these movies really for the action sequences. I go more for the characters, and I think this is a movie that this Volume 2 is a movie that really is kind of in love with these characters and wants to spend more time and let you know how they tick. And, a Marvel movie that has not just Kurt Russell, but Michael Rooker pretty much centered through a lot of this movie is kind of a real little special little thing in this universe. So I'm a fan of Volume 2 much more than the first one.
Okay. All right, Colin, what'd you think?
Yeah, so, with these kinds of sequels to comic book movies, they can tend to be quite, burdensome with how much more story goes on, because now we've gone through the origin of the characters, now we can just drop in and throw them in whatever storyline, that you want without having to explain everybody. But then the problem is that more characters come in. And, we have to explain them, and we have to explain, what all their through lines. And suddenly we got like three or four or five different storylines going on at the same time, because we have multiple main characters from the first film. And that can be a problem with a film like this. And at times it does feel like a problem. It does feel like the story gets bogged down a bit, and, the pacing gets a little bit off, especially in the third act, where there's so much going on, and the special effects get to be a bit overwhelming as well. It gets to be just this one big CGI parade of one expensive effects shot after another. So I didn't feel that invested in the storylines going on in this film. But whatever complaints I have in that department, the bottom line is this movie's really funny. And I laughed a lot during this movie. And I'm with Eric. I don't, you know, I go to these movies, and I like the first one. I enjoyed it because it seemed a little more loose. It seemed a little more on its own, and it didn't take itself too seriously. And I found that refreshing. And this movie is even more of that attitude, you know, when it needs it. And, you know, just when you think, oh, the movie's out of steam, it's just all going to be storyline and these, you know, arcs that have to come together, and we got to sit and wait for all these arcs to come together at the end. Something happens just in time that is just really funny and gets you back into the spirit of it. I love the Kurt Russell character. I love all that stuff. I love the new characters. I love the dynamic between, I had their names in front of me, but the Mantis character, what she brings to the whole dynamic, I think it was a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed seeing Sean Gunn, Kirk from Gilmore Girls, having a big role. He's always played the raccoon part when he's on the set. He's kind of the stand-in for that, but I love that his brother gave him a real role in this one, and it's pretty funny in it. And, you know, I think this is a lot of fun. I'm on board with the Guardians of the Galaxy part of the Marvel Universe. I'm down for a third one because these movies are really funny and really entertaining, and I love the characters. So, yeah, I'm giving this one a good review.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on. We got to take a break from the news. When we come back, I'll give you my thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So you guys hang on. By the way, it made a lot of money over the weekend. And we will talk about just how much money it made and what the box office was like. Yeah, we'll do that a little bit later on. But we got to take a break here. We got the news coming up and then more, the movie reviews. And I'll give you my thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. All right? All right. We'll be back on 720 WGN. Oh, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we are here every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, but the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the news, Eric and Colin both gave very positive reviews to the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And let's get back to it. All right. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hey.
Okay. I'm a big fan of the first movie. I thought the first movie was really very entertaining and really funny, and that's one of the things that I really like about what James Gunn has done here. There's a really good sense of humor here that I think is great. I actually thought this one was better than the first one too. I thought it was great, and I really really loved it, and I loved how that, you know, they did expand this universe, but did it in a way that was much more interesting. Like, the dynamic between the characters really works, and the comedy really works. There's a great sense of humor between all the characters. All the smart-ass remarks that Rocket makes. Rocket is a really great character, man. And I think Bradley Cooper does a great job doing the voice. And, of course, Baby Groot is adorable. And, you know, the it's my favorite opening credit sequence maybe ever, because I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. And just that the way that it's done, it's so hilarious with all the stuff going on in the background. And so what you've essentially got this massive, giant opening battle sequence that's out of focus. And I just love that. I think that there's this massive battle going on in the background, and we're just watching Baby Groot dance to Mr. Blue Sky. I could watch that all day long, man. And it's just a killer way to kick off the movie. It really is. And again, the soundtrack rules. I love the fact that they do the classic rock, and the fact that Brandy gets so much talk. Like, they analyze that song, you know? It's just fantastic. There's like, philosophical discussions about the importance of Brandy, this one-hit wonder song from the 70s. And the fact that Kurt Russell, you know, it's like, oh, you mean by Looking Glass? And he knows everything about this. That whole sequence between him and Chris Pratt discussing the genius of brandy is one of my favorite scenes I've seen all year. And I thought the relationship stuff really worked. You know, there was a real... The stuff between Gamora and Nebula was great, and it built up to this really wonderful emotional payoff, you know? And, you know, this great stuff between Dave Bautista and then the Mantis character, that also, there's a depth to that as well as being funny. You know, this obviously the stuff between Chris Pratt and Kurt Russell, the background of that stuff is really good. And I you know, you mentioned it, Eric. Rooker in this, Michael Rooker, is so good in this, and it's such a great role for him. He's a major player in this, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that. And the stuff between him and, you know, the groups the group that's led by Stallone is all, and there's a huge emotional payoff at the end of the movie with that. Like,
yeah.
Huge. And I also, Colin, am thrilled that Sean Gunn, you know, was pushed up to like a major role in this one too. It just took everything. I think it took everything from the first movie that was really cool and made it even better and invested more emotion in it. I didn't think I was going to be touched by it, but I was, and cared about these characters and what happens to them. You know, I just didn't expect that. You know, the CGI in the last third of the movie is a little much. I saw it in the IMAX 3D, so my brain was about to fall out of my head during the last 15 minutes of the movie. But it didn't bother me. You know, it didn't bother me enough to take away from the how much I liked it. And you're right, Colin. At one point, it was just like insane, just crazy, insane CGI stuff flying all over the place. But it never. I don't think it ever detracted from, you know, the urgency of what's happening between these characters, the relationships between these characters. And you're right, Eric. I mean, this, you know, obviously in the Fate and the Furious and the Fast and the Furious movies, when they talk about family, they say family 553 times, and it's always kind of like it does. It makes you kind of snicker and go, oh, my God, yeah, family. But it works in this movie. You're absolutely right. It earns it, Eric. You're right.
Yeah.
I think this is great. Huge entertainment. You know, the place was packed, and I saw it. Everybody loved it. All the crazy post-credit scenes, because there's like five of them, I thought they were all pretty funny. I won't give anything away, but there's another cameo in this movie from the first movie that, you know, in the postscript of the... You guys remember the postscript of the first movie? Okay, well, that person, that character shows up, but in the movie. Which I was just like, that's awesome that they actually put that character in the movie, not as like a jokey postscript thing, but he's in there. So, and I think everybody, you know, everybody really does very well. Chris Pratt, this is like a really great role for Chris Pratt. It plays to all of his strengths. You know, I think he was more goofy in the first one. But that's because there's like real stuff happening, like real emotional stuff happening here that he's got to deal with. And I think they pull it off really well. And, you know, listen, again, Kurt Russell, you put Kurt Russell in anything, it makes it better. And I also, there's just something about the fact that the top two movies in the country right now in the year 2017 feature Kurt Russell. That says something about how good the world is right now.
I can't believe that, you know, that, like, you know, this movie, which we're going to talk about the money in a second, you know, like Kurt Russell and Michael Rooker, man.
Yeah.
You could tell how much James Gunn respects both of these guys.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, to do what he's done for Rooker, you know, who's been in all of his movies, including Slither.
Yeah.
Is just great. And Russell just, you know, he's just a man.
He's Kurt Russell, man.
That's right.
What were you going to say, Colin?
I said it doesn't just have Kurt Russell. It has 80s Kurt Russell.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some of the best CGI that they use. which is fantastic. Because I was like, whoa, that looks weird, man. You know, they did the same. It's funny because like Kurt Russell and Jeff Bridges are two of my favorite actors of all time. And a lot of people think that they're similar in a lot of ways. And the fact that they've both done great work with Carpenter is another thing. But they did it to Jeff Bridges in that damn Tron movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that
was one of the first times they did it.
Yeah, and it was weird, man.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. And it took a couple of minutes, but the effects that they do to make Kurt Russell look young in this at the beginning of the movie are great.
Yeah. It's actually doubly great because when I first saw it, I actually, at first glance, I thought it was like Chris Pratt. So, like, the father-son connection between the two of them, making him actually 80s Kurt Russell, and he kind of looks like Chris Pratt,
yeah.
At least to me, I thought it was great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, everything about this is good. And I do want to mention that I really think, Bradley Cooper adds a lot. I think it's a really great voice performance by him.
It is.
I mean, Rocket is a really great character, a memorable character, and very funny. And all the stuff between all of them is really well done and funny, and the whole sequence with Baby Groot and the bomb is just
prison break,
the prison break,
him trying to find
my god,
this thing is great,
the funniest, that's the funniest sequence in the entire movie. I am telling you, I would very quickly, I'm just going to say the toe. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I almost fell out of my chair laughing. So, yeah, it's great stuff, man. And it's a hell of a way to kick off the summer movie season.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, next week, you guys aren't going to be on with us. Eric, you're going to drop in just for a second to give us a rundown on how the fest is going.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we'll be, 4 days deep into it at that point. Or
yeah.
three or four days deep.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about it, and I will have seen the Southland Tales and Lucky, and we can talk about that as well.
Great.
Colin, you're going to be you're off next week. And
yep.
What do we got, like, movie wise? We got that stupid King Arthur movie
and Snatch.
Those are the two big ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The that King Arthur movie. Oh my God.
God help us all.
Oh my God. I'm sure John Borman is nervous.
Yeah.
So, all right. Colin, have a great week, and we'll see you Saturday.
Sounds good.
Okay, buddy, take care. Colin, take care. Eric, you hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Eric Childress is going to hang out with us. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the box office. By the way, the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is great. It's really, really, really great, and it's even an improvement on the first one. So we, all three of us, highly, highly recommend Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, and it's time for the box office on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Morning. Hi. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. That means Monday morning movie reviews. We just did them. And we also talk about the box office, which we're going to do in a couple of seconds here. My dad's going to call in and tell a jokey, jokey joke. And we're going to talk about the best and worst buddy cop movies of all time, because that's a very, very great genre that we all love. All right. So we talk about the box office every week with Eric. Eric, tell everybody about how they can see you on TV talking box office and movie money.
Yeah, every Thursday morning at 5 a.m. on WICC television, a show called Business First AM. I'm on there and doing a segment called Movies and Money. I talk about the new releases each week and their box office potential.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get into that. And you also write a box office analysis every week for movies.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about the box office every week, and we're going to do that again right now. Again, here we go. Guardians of the Galaxy, $145 million for this weekend. Was that did it overplay or not?
No, it overplayed for what the initial tracking suggested. I actually overestimated this thing. I actually thought this thing was going to be even a bigger monster than it actually was. Mm. But that was just an opening weekend projection. I still think that this is going to be the biggest film of the summer. It was $145 million opening, which is about $51 million more than the first one opened to, and that was in August. So obviously got quite a nice bump in the opening weekend. Average projection for this, based on history, movies of its type and stuff, is right now an average of about $384 million when all is said and done in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it could get over $400 million. It doesn't have a lot of competition over the next couple of weeks. It should be an easy number one again next week. I'm starting to hear negative things about Alien Covenant already, so who knows where it'll be on weekend three.
Yeah.
I have no doubt this is going to be the biggest film of the summer. I think you're going to see this thing in the top 10 probably until late June.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. It's got some competition, though, as far as, like, biggest film of the summer, because the Spider-Man movie, I think, is going to give it a run for its money, don't you think?
I don't think so, actually. I think it's going to do very well. I think it's going to be one of the top earners. But that July slot that it has, it's opening after the July 4th holiday, so
right.
It won't have that holiday going for it.
Right.
And then you look at the weeks after it, a week after that, the Apes movie opens.
Oh, yeah.
The week
yeah.
after that, Dunkirk opens.
Mm.
Then, you know, I mean, I'm not really high on Dark Tower right now, but that opens a couple weeks after that as well. So it's got a little more kind of like direct competition to push back at it.
Yeah.
And Guardians has a little more breathing room. So that's why I think that this one. In fact, the only movie I think that could possibly challenge it is Despicable Me 3.
Yeah, I was just going to say that one is probably going to be a big one. Are people excited? I mean, I've hated all the Transformer movies, so I'm not. But is there any sort of like, oh, I can't wait to see the new Transformer movie kind of vibe?
No. No, I don't think that. I think this is going to be the first Transformers movie that doesn't make $200 million. In the U.S., I think that's the same thing going to be said about the Pirates movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
You never know sometimes, but again, that's another movie. They just moved it up, released a 2 days, so they're going to give it an extra 2 days to work before Spider-Man opens against it and Despicable Me 3 opens against it and all those big July movies.
Yeah.
But I don't think the demand is quite as there. It'll be a huge international hit. I don't have any doubt about that. But in the U.S., I think it'll easily be the lowest grossing of the franchise to date.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine anybody, you know, I don't understand. And
no,
by the way.
Know. I mean, I don't know anyone. I mean, I don't know a lot of people who go to bat for the Transformers movies in general. I hear a lot of like, well, I kind of like the first one. And then they don't have much to say about the sequels. And I don't know anyone that goes like, man, that Mark Wahlberg one was great.
Yeah.
You don't hear that.
No, it's true. All right, Eric, we will talk to you next week to let us know how the fest is going, and I will see you on Saturday.
That sounds great, man.
All right, buddy, see ya.
Okay.
There you go. Eric Childress, everybody, and he joins us and Colin every week. We talk about the new movies and talk about the box office. A shorter segment this week because we really didn't have much to talk about but Guardians. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll keep the topic of movies going, and we're going to talk about the best and worst buddy cop movies of all time. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200.